There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Friday Eve, Thursday edition of the show. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad to have you here. Be checking in with my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. in just a few minutes. Lots for us to talk about this hour with him. But first, we're going to go back over. Let's go down I-10 West over to Southwest Louisiana. We talked about this the other day with Lori Miles from the Mobile County Sheriff's Department about the deploying of the food truck from the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. I remember we were talking about their work in Houston for Hurricane Harvey years ago. Now they're back in the aftermath of Hurricane Laura in the area around Lake Charles. And from the Mobile County Sheriff's Office, Adam Strange is joining us. He's off the cooktop for long enough to talk to us. Thanks, Adam, for what you're doing over there, and thanks for being on with us.
Not a problem. Thank you so much. We got a really good team here.
Yeah, so if people have not seen this in action before, when we talk about the food truck or the mobile kitchen, describe what y'all are working in. What do you take over there?
Well, they have a lot of food that's being taken, of course, and all the supplies and water that you can imagine because, of course, there is no power here within this Calcasieu County. At least the southern part of it, where we're located at. So the food truck and the other logistics vehicles, they have to be self-supportive. So we have our own water here. We also carry a lot of bottled water to distribute to local law enforcement officers that are here in Calcasieu County.
So you set up there. You make the drive over. It's set up. And then we're going to talk about things that are needed over there. But y'all are cooking meals, right? That's what you're doing. You're turning out food for these folks.
Absolutely. Like I say, it's a good, hardworking team here. These guys are really putting out the food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for local law enforcement in the area just to try to help out any way possible.
Now, imagine that is a big deal for those folks, because not only are those public safety folks working hard to take care of everybody there, but I imagine their homes are damaged. I mean, a lot of them, from what I've heard, their homes are damaged. Their life is uprooted back at home, even when they're not at work.
Absolutely. So we haven't had a chance really to get around here in the south part of the county, but just judging from the area that we're at around Calcasieu Correctional Center and Sheriff's Department, there's a lot of damage here. A lot of down power lines still in the road, power poles still in the road. So, yeah, to have any type of a hot meal or whatever is definitely a benefit for local law enforcement here. And that's what these guys are providing.
Yeah, so, you know, you've been doing that and you haven't driven, you know, around the whole area. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. One of my friends who just got back there was working with on the fire department side, but he's talking about the amount of damage. But the fact is, it's not like you've said it. You couldn't find a place that had power and water. I mean, nowhere has power and water, right?
No, exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, how are those people dealing with it? What's the, when you talk to fellow for public safety folks and people that come in, what are they saying that's going on out there? Are people, have they all left the area? Are they trying to make do with what's there? What are you hearing? You getting any of that information?
Well, just conversations with the local law enforcement as they come to get their meals throughout the day. You know, it's just, you know, they're making their rounds and they're trying to do their job best they can, of course, to support their community.
So one of the things we can do back home, right, and is help y'all out. And there's so many people back home, you know, that just want to do something to help out those folks in Louisiana. Y'all need supplies.
Yep. Yep, donations. I mean, we have cooking things like hamburgers, hot dogs, chili, Salisbury steak, those kind of items. And this this trailer here the Sheriff Department has, Mobile County Sheriff Department has, is really equipped. We've got deep fryers, stoves, anything in a commercial kitchen that you can imagine is in a compact unit right here that is towed behind a dually.
I mean, so y'all, y'all are running like a regular kitchen there. Short order chef time.
Yes, absolutely. Anything that you can imagine as far as in a short order cook area or facility, they're doing 250 to 300 meals at a time, if you can imagine that.
Wow. Wow. So we got to keep the supplies heading y'all's way. Adam, thank you for the update, and keep on cooking.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Like I said, it's an amazing team here with Corporal Gary, Corporal Austin, Sergeant Gamper, and Sergeant Murphy. Great group of guys.
Who's the best cook?
Come on.
Right now, come on.
Today, Corporal Adam Austin, he's on top of it. He's the fried guy for today.
I love it. Well, tell him Godspeed from all of us back here at home.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Sean.
Hey, thank you. So Adam Strange checking in from Calcasieu Parish, Louisiana, over there at Lake Charles, where the Mobile County Sheriff's Office is cooking meals for those first responders. That's a big deal. It's a big deal as they're working their tails off. I know, talking to a friend of mine who is just back from over there, and they were working in Lake Charles as well. And I asked him, I said, how's it really? How's it really that, you know, we've seen pictures, we've seen some video, and, you know, often we talk about this in media, that it's, you're going to focus on the area that's worse. It's the nature, there, it's not even the news company trying to lie to you. It's just the nature of what the camera is going to seek out is the worst place, the most destructive. How many times have you watched national coverage of something and all these, you know, there's 10 different TV stations represented between cable news, national news, local, and they're all shooting the same shot. That's because that's the most compelling. That's the one that that tells the story, catches the eyes the most. I don't even think it's nefarious. It's just the nature of the business. But I asked my buddy who was there and said, that's everywhere. I said, what do you mean? I said, are they showing it overly? He said, no, they're not showing it. They're not showing some of the worst stuff. He said, the areas we went in, he said, Sean, it is the tree damage in Lake Charles. He described it as what some of us would remember from Frederick or talking about Hurricane Michael, that Category 5 that went into the panhandle. And just, he said, you have trees that are straight leveled. You have the old, we all around here remember seeing those, the old twist and break trees where a tornado will twist and then snap that tree halfway up. He said, the home damage, I said, what was the home damage to, you know, to trailers and RVs? He said, we're talking about solid 3-2 stick-built homes that are massively damaged where somebody couldn't move back in. Now, he couldn't even talk about the damage south of I-10. They didn't work that area. Down towards the coast, he said there were other, and he's talking about firefighters that are in there from Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Ohio, Florida. I don't want to miss one. He talked about all these different groups are in there, and they're gridding out the areas, and it's like the responsibility of Mobile Fire Rescue is this, and then the Ohio guys were working this. I think he said they were working south towards the coast, where the story down there, obviously the wind will be an issue, but the storm surge and the effect on those people's lives. So a lot going on over there between the Sheriff's Department, the JCs. We've listed the churches and civic groups out there that are taking supplies. We get it. We get it better than, and FEMA is going to be very important there. But in the meantime, Gulf Coast folks helping out Gulf Coast folks like we have done in the past will continue to be the fastest way to help. So whether it's through your church, through the Sheriff's Department, make sure you do something. Bring them the supplies they need. Donate to the right groups. Make sure you do your due diligence before you donate money. But if it's something like the Sheriff's Department or something like that, you know you're donating in the right place. Your church, you're donating in the right place. Your civic group that you know the people, you're donating in the right place. Or those supplies that are so well received in Southwest Louisiana. All right, a man who has some experience there, my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. joins us next. We've got a lot to talk about. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along and good to have my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How you holding up?
Good. Before we get into all the stuff we're going to talk about this hour, something that is near and dear to your heart, as well as we got done talking to Adam Strange, who's over in Calcasieu Parish with the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. I was talking about my buddy, the firefighter, what he saw over there working. You live there. You got friends. Yes. You were showing me pictures on your phone of your friend's house there in Lake Charles.
Yes.
I
lived in Lake Charles, Louisiana in 2005. Time frame we
That's
had
Rita,
Hurricane
right?
Katrina and Hurricane Rita, right? And so I was just communicating back and forth with some of my peeps down there, and they were sending me pictures of their houses and their yards and their communities, and there is a lot of damage down there. You know, the national coverage that's happening right now is giving you a glimpse into it, but it is really, really a devastating situation down there.
It is, there's going to be the storm surge story south, but this tree damage story and stuff into houses and house damage up in Lake Charles, y'all, that's up on I-10.
Yep.
And it's a monster hurricane when it hit. And I just want to make sure that, there's absolutely a place for FEMA, federal response. That's an important thing. But we've noticed over the years in the storms, in FEMA gets a month in, they're really got the formula, mm-hmm. And not that they're not trying now, but what I saw in the aftermath of Katrina and other storms is local folks helping out.
When I was in Lake Charles after Hurricane Katrina hit, I was part of the group that ran the evacuation center there at the Lake Charles Civic Center. And what I tell people is when I got the call that morning from my general manager saying that Red Cross needed our help, when we showed up, there were two professional Red Cross staffers, the executive director and then a registered nurse, and there were a bunch of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so literally it was us pulling the community together and then keeping everything kind of spinning for, 72 to 96 hours before those rapid response teams could even get there.
Right.
So everything from your common everyday citizen to the Cajun Navy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in that immediate response time frame, it's ultimately going to be neighbors helping neighbors.
So, and even though we're not, side by side neighbors over here in our part of the Gulf Coast, we get it. We should do for wherever somebody was, but we get it even more than somebody who lives inland, what those folks are going through. So, y'all keep up the great efforts, and I know we will continue. As you have a civic group, church group, whatever, you're getting donations, you're taking them there. It's water, it's tarps, it's whatever it is. Let us know. You can hit us up on the text line, or you can email me, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, or any of us here. Email us. Send it to info at fmtalk1065.com with your information, and we will continue to put out that info as these donations are so very needed. All right, a lot to talk about today. You mentioned this, and I'm lucky that my buddy also listens to me when he's not on the air. He's a listener to the show, and you're listening.
I do. When I'm driving around the car, I'll listen to you.
And you were listening yesterday in hour number two of the show, playing some audio, and I got more questions about this guy mm-hmm. yesterday after I finished up. So he's a guy I'm a fan of. His name's Colion Noir. It's not his real last name, but it's his online
his stage name,
right? social media name. He's a Second Amendment advocate. He is an attorney. He like a lot of the videos I watch, it's just like tech stuff, like, hey, here's a new rifle, here's a new magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But he also talks about the politics
right.
of the Second Amendment. And he took on the situation with Kyle Rittenhouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin, with the shooting. And he broke it down, I thought, better than anybody I'd heard in national media, in my opinion.
Okay.
He broke it down, first of all, saying what I thought needed to be said, that he should, Rittenhouse should not have been there.
What was
a 17-year-old with a, that was there, why do you put a 17-year-old on a riot? He said that was first mistake.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify one thing, though. But when you were talking about his analysis, did you like the analysis because of the way that he was explaining it, or did you like it because of what he was saying,
right.
or a combination
probably
of both?
Probably a combination of both. Okay. So, but I think you've known me long enough that I'm looking for fact in something. And
sure.
And also somebody who will tell you in the beginning that all these different players, he didn't make anybody a hero in this. He didn't say, he said the kid shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have been there with an open carry weapon, a 17-year-old in a situation like that.
Yes.
He said, I know many 40-year-olds that don't have the mm-hmm. mental capacity to be in that situation.
Right.
What he did is what I thought was different than elsewhere on social media and why it caught my attention, is he didn't say, Kyle Rittenhouse is the greatest person ever. He said, let's talk about the legality or the illegality of his shooting.
Right.
And that's what I thought caught my attention. Sure, as a strong Second Amendment advocate, that gets my attention. But I can look, if somebody makes a bobo argument for the Second Amendment, I'm the first person to get pushback here when people tell me, well, if I saw somebody down the street stealing something, I'd shoot them. And I'd say, you'd be a murderer. You don't get to do that. That's not how, you know, using your weapon to defend your life or life of an innocent works. It doesn't work that way. So I think I'm balanced on it. Still a strong Second Amendment advocate, but there are rules and laws defining this. And so when he broke it down, even at the end when he said, you have a situation, if you had a felon, right, who was not allowed to have a gun, and somebody breaks into his house and he uses a gun to defend his life or life of an innocent, he's going to jail, not for murder, but because he's a felon in possession of that firearm. And I think that kind of boiled down a non-emotional discussion of why Rittenhouse shouldn't be found guilty of murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was interesting to listen to, and I think I agree with you from the standpoint that he laid out the case fairly well as to why it was, in his legal opinion, he thought that Rittenhouse was operating under a self-defense rule. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty good. The one thing that I thought was interesting, and I am not a lawyer, but just
neither of us are.
Yeah, just as a guy who's kind of listening to it, was it felt like he was making the case from the perspective of a defense attorney, more so than just kind of laying out what the arguments would have been on either side. So let me explain to you what I meant by that. So we know from a self-defense perspective, there's the idea of proportionality, right? So if somebody comes and steps on your foot, you can't, you know, stab them with a jailhouse shank because that's not a proportional response, right? And so as you start to go through each of the three cases that were articulated, the question becomes the very first one when, you know, and there's some disputes in terms of what actually happened before the shots were fired, but if somebody is throwing a plastic bag at you, is that throwing the plastic bag at you the threshold for causing you to say that you are fearing for your life, therefore making the appropriate response to fire?
Right. So you're saying
this is just for example.
And one thing that I don't know, I saw the thing thrown and it carried where a plastic bag wouldn't. It had to have something with some kinetic energy to carry the distance it did.
Sure.
Like we go out here and try to throw one of the grocery bags out of my truck or something, it's not going anywhere. So it went there. He was being chased. And we don't know. These are the unknowns. And I think Colian said it. He said, on the information that I have right now, which is always, you know, that's what's refreshing, that he believes that as he's being chased and he's fleeing, that he feels threatened that he's being chased by this person. And there's some video from before where this guy is challenging Rittenhouse and telling them what he's going to do and all that.
And this is the reason why I think it's important to break down the three separate firings, because each of the three can be evaluated in a way that's different, right? So he talked about this kind of duty to retreat. And so if you look at somebody and you know, just we talk about fight, flight, or freeze, that if somebody's actually in the process of conducting a crime where you feel as though somebody is putting somebody else in grave danger, all of the arguments that he was using to say that Rittenhouse may have been operating under the umbrella of self-defense, you can say apply to the individual who got shot. So he may have thought that Rittenhouse was performing in a way where he was going to take somebody else's life, and that's what ultimately caused him to grab the gun.
And we're going to go to break here in a second, but the shooting of the person at the car lot. That has, I'll agree, there's at least a little more question of that. After that, he said, the shooting that goes on that probably has gotten more video plays than any, where Rittenhouse has fallen down on the street.
You talking about the guy with the skateboard?
Yeah.
The skateboard force?
And so we talk about the proportionality, but even with proportionality, if somebody is swinging a skateboard at my head, you know, at that point, that skateboard, that's a fun thing that our kids ride on, is a weapon and a bludgeon, and that changes.
Right. So this is the reason why I was saying, from the perspective of him doing it essentially as a defense attorney, I understand it.
Gotcha. But we're going to pick this up. We've got news, and then we're coming right back. More of Robert Kennedy Jr. right here on Midday Mobile.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Hanging out with my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. We just heard something from Dalton. Walked in, you heard kind of a sigh from both of us. We had a call, a woman from has family in Cameron, Louisiana, yes. So now south down on the coast there, and said nobody's helping.
Just
down
right
there
on the water. I mean, that is, so they would have been getting the worst of it.
I mean, and storm surge as well. You know, I wonder if this is not reminiscent of, like, what a couple hurricanes went into Texas coast, and I remember more. It wasn't Harvey. More people were focused on Houston, and it was like, the real damage was like down
Beaumont.
Towards Port, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and then another one went in. It was like Port Lavaca and down there on mm-hmm. that area where they had the more damage. And there were people back then saying, "There's all this help going over here,
right.
And look at us down here." So, I appreciate that call from you. Keep us up to date with what you hear from your family and Cameron. We'll push it on this end and see what can be sent. If you're a civic group, maybe you've taken a truckload over to Lake Charles. Maybe it's time to coordinate and take something to Cameron and Holly Beach and those places down there. It's just, you know, they do for us in the same situation we'll do for them. Let's just make sure we help out and we don't forget them. That's a problem, too. Because at a certain point, we've all been through it. You were through it in Lake Charles.
Yep.
I've been through it here. That when it fades away from the A block of a news story,
mm-hmm.
those folks are still suffering. But nobody's thinking about it because we're on to whatever else
this
it
will
is.
Be months to years to recover. It's not going to be days and weeks.
I mean, if houses are like your friends or the what I've heard from my buddies, pictures I've seen here, It's years. I mean, mm-hmm. construction companies can only build so fast, and people, you know, my
exactly.
gosh. So thank you for that call and heads up. All right, so you and I were talking about the audio played yesterday. It came from a video, and you can find it online if you look for Colleen Noir.
Right.
And he's all over YouTube, and he's a social media guy, Facebook, all that stuff. And usually I'm just watching, like, videos on, like, here's a new rifle that so-and-so put out, or here's, you know, this mm-hmm. kind of gun stuff. But beyond that, he is an attorney. He's a super smart guy, at least from my perspective. Not being a lawyer, I hear him and I'm like, wow, okay.
Right.
He knows this stuff from a legal aspect, and his, obviously, his heart's in it. He's into it. But and that's worth taking into
right.
effect, because you said what I played yesterday was not a legal, it was a defense attorney's
yeah,
opinion.
I thought it was
fair,
one perspective
fair.
On why was he felt it was self-defense, but I think there's another perspective where you can argue that the other people who are engaging him, that it may not have been a mob in the classic sense of the word, but they were responding to something that happened in order to try to make the situation safe. A person's natural instinct isn't to chase somebody with an open carry firearm.
It isn't, but what I would argue, and this is, we're all just working off video clips of different situations.
All that we know, right?
There's often things in between that mm-hmm. we don't know. But from the video clips and the information that's out there now, the person that was shot at the car dealership,
mm-hmm.
there's a video of him beforehand,
right?
Really getting in the face of Rittenhouse mm-hmm. and threatening him. And, you know, I mean, it was nasty, the interchange there. They were, you know, kind of pulling back, I guess, Rittenhouse and two other guys, I guess, that were doing the defense of the building or whatever, trying to pull them back. And
I was wondering, did the people who owned the building request them to protect it?
I don't know that. And you know, that's what, and Colian said in the beginning of it, he said, him being there, is not. I'm not celebrating, that's not a good thing. He detached that from, which is, I think, important, let's discuss the legality of the shoot.
And that's the reason why I think if you were talking about this as a Second Amendment issue,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be closer to, you remember the one in St. Louis, I think it was the McCluskeys,
yeah.
if I'm saying that correctly?
Sure.
So if he was in front of his parents' business, for example, doing
yeah,
it,
I think that
changes the perspective on everything.
It gives him maybe more of a...
It becomes
more
castle
of a
doctrine.
Yeah, it's castle
in a way.
Right.
But the reason why I wanted to bring this up here was not to take it too far off topic, was when you start talking about issues of accountability and the fact that he was even there, there's a chain of events where he was in close proximity to adults. And just instinctively, you're not going to say, hey, I think I need this 17-year-old to go protect some place that's not his
right.
home.
Right. I don't know if he was requested or not. And, you know, should he have been? They talk about, well, he traveled from out of state, Now, it's 30 minutes. It sounds like it's basically traveling.
I'm not worried about that.
But then, you know, and Colleen pointed out the other people involved in this had traveled from out of state to be there, too.
Yeah, that started to get into a little bit of whataboutism, which I wasn't particularly thrilled with that part of the analysis.
Well, but you and I both are homers, and we often go, you know, I want to hear the voice of somebody who lives there. It doesn't mean they don't have the First Amendment right to be there, but if I'm doing a preference chart of who am I going to listen to in a given community, the people that live there are more important to me than somebody that comes in.
The point that I was making was I'm not that wrapped up in the fact that he drove across state lines to go there.
Right.
My thing that I was trying to highlight in that particular part of the conversation was, did he go on his own or was he requested to be there? Because that now sets up a chain of accountability. If somebody requested someone to come protect their building and the person requested was a 17-year-old who wasn't legally able to open carry in that area, that's a problem. That's the part that I was focusing on, which is independent of...
It is. That's why I love that breakdown, because what I don't see on social media is where people have been able to make it independent discussions. It's one thing that flows through the whole deal. And so you can make judgments on this part A. Well, this was wrong here. But that's why I think it was so brilliant to say situation with somebody who's a felon who has a gun that defends their life with it. They don't go to jail for doing that. They go to jail for having a firearm, but they don't. So
right.
I think that was trying to break that, saying that you're the beatification of somebody versus the condemnation of them.
But that's the reason why I tied the thing together, because if in that Castle Doctrine sense he had been protecting his own thing, if he potentially overreacted, because we know there's a reason why we don't typically give 17-year-olds the ability to open carry.
Right.
It has to do with maturity and temperament and stuff like that.
Or they shouldn't be at a riot in the first place.
Which goes back to any one of a number of people who should not have been
there
after curfew.
Yep.
Right. But the other part that I wanted to tie up on as well was, it's this notion that everyone who is there is not necessarily there for nefarious reasons, right? So every person who is at the protest isn't rioting.
Correct.
Just like every person who is open carrying at the protest isn't out there intending to kill someone.
Absolutely. That's like realistic perspective that is lost on social media sometimes. And then this discussion of, we got the first interaction that leads to the shooting at the car lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then... It's interesting to me that Rittenhouse stands by and calls and says he's killed somebody.
Mm-hmm. Called somebody on the phone.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I think law enforcement or somebody, they said there's a call made where he said, I've killed somebody, and we'll find out, I'm sure,
yeah,
who that
confirmed.
Was.
It was a friend of his that he called.
Mm-hmm. And so, and they were trying to, there were people there trying to render assistance.
Mm-hmm.
He was standing there. Here comes folks running towards him.
Yep.
Now, at that point, we don't, how many times do I say this? I don't know what's in the hearts and minds of people, but let's just take this for example, like Colleen Noir did, and said he sees them and he realizes what they're looking at. There's mm-hmm. one of their friends, crew, whatever, laying dead there.
Right.
They're coming, running at him, get him, and they had to edit out the expletives, but
of
they
course.
Were coming for, and then he runs. And at that point, we see the, you know, the run that ends up on this street somewhere nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, and he pointed out that Rittenhouse is running away from the danger.
Right.
He is not even standing his ground, as mm-hmm. people say. He's running away from the danger. When he falls down, he can't do that anymore.
Right.
And he falls down. And at that point, he said, if he would have just started randomly shooting, he would not have been...
Indiscriminately
shooting. Yeah, I think that's the term. And then you see the video there with the guy with the skateboard that comes up, and somebody was saying, you know, about skateboard, like I said, that it could be a deadly weapon. Absolutely could. If you're bludgeoned on the head with a skateboard, mm-hmm. could be a deadly weapon. And the fear is, I don't, once again, I'm projecting, I don't know what's in Rittenhouse's mind. If your firearm's taken away from you, it'll be used against you.
Right. So to go back one step before that. So when you're talking about the initial shooting, there are some things that are in dispute. I believe he was shot in the head, maybe mm-hmm. the chest and the hip or something like that.
Well, the whole I unfortunately saw the video. I usually don't like to watch that, but it caught me for he was shot in the head.
Yeah, I did not watch that video. Just
he was shot in the head. I mean, it's,
but was he going towards him when he was shot? Was he going away from him when he was shot? All those things that ultimately come out in the investigation. But subsequent to that, if you witness somebody shooting somebody and you're one of the people in the crowd, it's like, what is your instinct? And that's where I went back to fight, flight, freeze is kind of the three things, right? And so, yes, somebody on the phone told him to get out of there, but what should he have actually done? Should he have ran or should he have stayed? All I'm doing is I'm identifying the fact that some of the people who went after him very well may have been attempting to contain him while police came.
I can't say that that's not true.
And that's the reason why I was saying it very well may have been self-defense, but it might not have been self-defense either, because they may have thought they were protecting other people from the possibility of, you know, leading to a similar fate.
Now, but then again, there are there's so many pieces of information that Gage, one of the people there, a guy named Gage something, had put a post up that he should have killed them and emptied the magazine into this
guy. Was this one of the congressmen? This wasn't...
No, that was...
That was a different one?
No, this was... But it was a... it's been on several places where they... Now, it's a screenshot from Facebook. So I'm going to also tell y'all...
Take it with a grain of salt, right?
That doesn't mean it's true. But this is just until that's a piece of information out there.
Was this the guy who had the handgun?
Yes.
Gotcha. Now, the handgun's actually different in my analysis.
Well, okay, because we've got two guys. We've got a skateboard guy, okay, which I will argue is in that situation, those close quarters, to me, in my interpretation, is the same as the handgun guy, because that skateboard, and you see the slow-mo where he's trying to crack him over the head with the skateboard. And then, so that's one, okay, and then the person who produces the handgun that he shoots, I see those, I understand they're different in deadliness and weapons, but in that situation, could you believe that both would be used to kill you?
See, and this is where I think that my particular point of view may have differed from some of the other folks. I thought the production of the handgun was the one that instinctively you could trigger and think that the whole thing has now been elevated, right? And you start getting into the distinction between having a weapon doesn't mean you have a death sentence. Pointing a weapon means you have a death sentence, right?
Yeah.
And so am I expecting a 17-year-old to discern between drawing it versus pointing it? That may be an unreasonable thing to do. But that's the reason why I'm saying it's still a question as to whether or not, all right, am I drawing my weapon because I'm trying to detain somebody who's dangerous as well. So a lot of this needs to continue to be uncoiled. Some of it will throughout the investigation.
Absolutely.
But I don't think from a larger perspective we need to lose sight of the first thing, that as a general rule, from a parenting standpoint and from a militia standpoint, you probably don't need to have 17-year-olds around you.
Absolutely. That's not a place for, and like Colian said, there's a lot of 40-year-olds that don't have the mental capacity to be in that situation. You know, one thing on the, you talked about it earlier when we started, about stepping on, if somebody steps on your toe, you don't shank them.
Right.
That's not equivalent. But there is a nuance within the scale, the escalation scale out there for defense that's, okay, if there's two guys coming at me, they're going to beat me up or something like that. And they haven't shown any weapons, and we're close to the same size. I don't have, the way I've heard it, I don't have the assumption there that they're going to take my life.
Right.
If you're somebody who is very small and the people are gigantic, you know, then there's an argument. They've talked about it, actually, and it's sexist to some degree, but I've heard the discussion why, you know, a woman confronted with a much bigger man who doesn't have a gun but has some kind of bludgeon or coming after her is been green-lighted on a shoot where, and this is all kind of gray and murky, where a man of the same size wouldn't have the same belief of loss of life. So that's one of the things that you compare apples to oranges, but in some, and in those cases it could be wrong, but you replace who the apple is or who the orange is, and then you can, and I think he said it, Colian said, you know, being more than one person coming at you too, you know, what do you expect from that?
And that's the reason why I keep going back to the point about the weapon, right? And a person's natural instinct to confront somebody who has a weapon, whether it has been discharged or whether it has not been discharged. And that's the reason why the best case, I think, of the three for self-defense was the person producing the handgun.
Right.
I think that's the best case for it. But the other two, I don't think the case is as strong. And the case of the first one, because we talked about the plastic bag that may have had something in it.
Right.
Right. And then the second...
Yeah, because it carried. Yeah.
Right. And then the second one was, yes, he was being chased and the guy hit him with a skateboard, but it wasn't like he was getting beat down with the skateboard because he fired so quickly.
But the guy, if you see the video, the guy, I tell you what, we're going to run to the break here. Can you stay till the end of the hour?
Sure.
Okay, because I got some questions on the text line, too. But okay. I'll just say, if you go back, if y'all watch that video, what I see is that skateboard's coming straight for his head. And if somebody took the old Tony Hawk, you know, skateboard with the big metal independent trucks on it and swings it at my head.
It's not going to feel good.
Yeah, and it could kill you.
Mm-hmm.
It could kill you. All right, coming right back. Plus, we have a big announcement to make about programming here at FM Talk 106.5. So y'all stay tuned. That's a tease. And then we'll be right back, and then we'll
on the other side of the break.
There we go. See, this man's done it before.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Well, it gets a lot of these text questions as well. Have a conversation with my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. I will start off with Mike the Cable Guy says, "Wow, Sean, I didn't peg you as a skater." Well, at my advanced age of 48, I will walk by a skateboard the same way I would a rattlesnake, giving it distance and staying away from it because it could hurt or kill me. But maybe in decades ago, Mike might have skateboarded once or twice. I was a child of the 80s. What are you going to do? I remember my different trucks manufacturers. He said he liked that I talked about independent trucks. They were the best. We can get in a discussion of skateboard trucks and decks and all that in a show to come. I want to talk about a show to come as well. It's back a week from this Friday.
Yes, season 3. Can you believe it? We're already into season 3 of Kennedy for Alabama. We'll be back on the airways on Friday, September 11th. And then we'll be doing that weekly, Fridays at 6 o'clock p.m. And as we ramp up into this year's general election, we're really excited about being able to be back on the airwaves, continuing our partnership with FM Talk 106.5 and bringing a different perspective to the conversation.
I love it. I'm glad you're back in. That's for sure.
Tagging back in.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right. From the text line here, a lot of text here. This is, he said, because we talked about Rittenhouse being at that store.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so Tony and Daphne says, nobody requested the people come burn their buildings down either. So did they request him to be there? But he's pointing out that the building had been damaged, you know.
It makes a difference from a liability standpoint. So, like, for example, when I was back in the casino industry, we had to go through and get certifications for identifying people who had drank too much.
Right.
Right. And so we actually had some responsibility that if we sent somebody out and they drank too much, we could be held accountable for that. So if somebody has requested a security force and that security force is not appropriately trained and credentialed, then they can be held accountable for that, right? And so that's right. Kind of what I was getting at was there's an accountability issue with why he was there that extends beyond himself as an individual, some with the parents, some with the militia people who he is with, some with the store owner, et cetera, et cetera.
So in the breakdown that I heard from somebody who has the, now once again, you said in your ears it sounded like a defense attorney's perspective,
mm-hmm. right.
But in mine it sounds like somebody who knows the law and breaks it down, and it wasn't a rah-rah for Rittenhouse when
right.
Colleen Noir
mm-hmm.
said,
right.
But he talked about, basically it's this idea, and it kind of, I keep going back to what he said at the end of it, but that even if the person had done something, okay, he said, if you're an aggressor and you use the weapon, you're not protected. You
sure.
started the incident.
Mm-hmm.
You started
Absolutely.
The incident. But it sounds like the break between those things is important. Like, you could do the thing, like, to be the aggressor, okay, and which they're not saying he was, but you could be the aggressor, and then that is over. And now a second scenario comes out, and you don't resign your rights to defend yourself. Now, if it's during that initial aggression, you do lose your rights. To, you know, if you were the aggressor, you're doing the bad thing. But even if you did that, and that sits there, and you go on to some other scenario, something, you know, chronologically distant, and I don't know if it's by seconds, mm-hmm. minutes, geography, what it is, but it's a reset on your right to defend yourself.
But that actually ends up becoming the question as to whether or not it was a single incident or whether or not it was a series of incidents, and then who was within that initial scope, right?
It is, and that's, and there's, I think there's a lot of things we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do see, and I think it was important, is that there's a perspective here saying hey, even because social media is just binary.
And of course, of course.
And it's saying that this kid could be both things. It absolutely could be in the wrong place, shouldn't have been there, was violating the law by being there. All those things should be true. But then when he shoots, he could be in the right. And those two things can exist within the law.
They can exist in the law, and that's the reason why I was kind of parsing out the individual situations for each time that he fired. But as is often the case whenever we talk about this with law enforcement, you don't know what happened before the tape started rolling.
Sure.
Right? And particularly when you talked about defining who was the aggressor,
mm-hmm.
right? And then whether or not it rose to the level that it should have resulted in a trigger being pulled.
What you and I talked about during the break is when the facts, more facts come mm-hmm. out.
Right.
And you could run the scenario two ways. You know, one where Rittenhouse, that something I have not seen, that was not, was in the wrong. And mm-hmm. then we have a guilty verdict on a manslaughter or a murder, some degree, I don't know.
Somewhere along the continuum.
That outcome versus if the facts show that, just like what was laid out by Collier and Noir, that Rittenhouse would be guilty of minor in possession of a firearm mm-hmm. crossing state line, blah, 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 but misdemeanor things. Mm-hmm. The reactions. And the reaction that we have a incident that has seemed to, in this case, spawned what happened
mm-hmm.
that will then perpetuate itself
yes.
down the road.
And that's really what the biggest fear is, because when we talk about under the umbrella of Black Lives Matter, the initial movement started as a result of two things. One was relationship between black communities and police operating authority. And the second one was under the umbrella of vigilante justice. So think about Trevo Martin, down George Zimmerman, what happened down in Florida, right? And so my fear is that if we don't get the facts out, get them out quickly, that we could end up in a situation where this continues to feed the narrative,
mm-hmm.
not because the person on the other end of the firearm was African American, but just because
in this case,
in the context
right.
of a protest.
There you go. All right. Week from Friday.
Week from Friday, yes. Looking forward to being back. Go ahead and plug it in while you're in your cars heading off to whatever you're doing on your Friday evening. We'd love to have you listen and call in and share your thoughts. Kennedy for Alabama.
Good stuff. I'll see you next week. All right. Coming right back. Hour number two. Andy Andrews is going to join us next hour. He's got a new book coming out and some perspectives he wants to share. We'll do that.